Matthew chapter 28, starting at verse number 1. It says, after the Sabbath at dawn on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. And there was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven and going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes were white as snow. The guards were so afraid of him that they shook and became like dead men. The angel said to the women, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you are looking for Jesus who was crucified. He is not here. He has risen, just as he said. Come and see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples, he has risen from the dead and is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will find him. Now I have told you." So the women hurried away from the tomb, afraid yet filled with joy, and ran to tell his disciples. Suddenly, Jesus met them. "Greetings," he said. They came to him, clasped his feet, and worshiped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee. There they will see me." Church, let me begin this morning by telling you once and for all that I am sick of death. I have had enough of death. I can't stomach hearing about another bombing or another shooting or another lost battle with cancer or another overdose or another loss due to complication to diabetes. I have had it up to here with death. This Friday, I will celebrate another birthday, and while I praise God that I may get to see another year, now it's not promised, but I'm reminded with each passing year that barring any tragic ending, I am closer to death than when I was born. I have had enough of death. How many of y'all out there are with me? Are you sick of death? It broke my heart to hear last week as we were coming to church that several Coptic Christians in Egypt lost their lives as they were celebrating Palm Sunday in their church in Egypt. Some cowards just bombed their church while they were worshiping God. It breaks my heart to hear of a judge in Chicago. He's a brother. He's a member of the Church of Christ. A 65-year-old judge was gunned down, shot and killed right in front of his home by some assailants. It breaks my heart. I just read yesterday that an NFL player, Todd Heap, he played tight end for the Baltimore Ravens several years ago, backing up in his driveway in his truck, hit his 3-year-old daughter. And she rushed to the hospital where she died. About 20 years ago, during the Easter season, I was in school and heard got some tragic news that my first cousin Pam was murdered by her boyfriend. And I remember going to that funeral, and it was the first time I'd ever gone to a funeral of someone who had been murdered. That does something. It's just not, shouldn't happen, right? But now, 20 years later, I get word 2 weeks ago that her son, who was just a little kid when she was murdered, they found him in a home, heroin overdose, dead. Church, I'm sick of death. I've had enough of death. Are you with me? I mean, We just got the word, you know, I'm mentioning the announcements that our sister Gretchen Carver died, and I granted, you know, she lived a good life, and she was older, but I just can't stand to hear another report of somebody dying. I've had enough of death. And nearly 2,000 years ago, a couple of women were probably just as sick of death as we are. They like us, were aware and cognizant that listen, death is a part of life. Jews didn't fret death. They didn't fear death. You know, they actually looked forward to death. Death was sort of a crowning achievement. They lived a life and then they died. They welcomed death. They didn't really fear the way that we often fear death. They looked forward to it. But it's not out of place to think that there were some Jews just as fed up with death as we are, particularly these women who came to the tomb in the text in Matthew. They were women who, just like their fellow Jews, they were oppressed, and they saw their loved ones persecuted by the Roman Empire for seemingly no reason. They were sick of death, seeing their loved ones being dragged off to prisons and some executed for minimal crimes. They were sick of death. As a people, their identity had been robbed and buried under the power and the prominence of the Roman Empire. And they were sick of death. Their only hope, church, rested with the presence of a man named Jesus. Jesus of Nazareth. He was a good man. He was a divine man. He was like no other. He was Jehovah's chosen servant. He was the one that these women knew would be the remedy to their disconnect with this life and all the death that was associated with that disconnect. While the presence of Jesus brought hope to many, it angered others, and some even conspired to get rid of him. And so the Gospel of Matthew reports this in chapter 12 and verse number 15. It says, Jesus, being aware of this, he withdrew from that place. A large crowd followed him, and he healed all who were ill. He wanted them not to tell others about him. This was to fulfill what was spoken through the prophet Isaiah. Here is my servant. This is Jehovah speaking. Here is my servant whom I have chosen, the one I love in whom I delight. I will put my spirit on him, and he will proclaim justice to the nations. He will not quarrel or cry out, nor no one will hear his voice in the streets. A bruised reed he will not break, and a smoldering wick he will not snuff out till he has brought justice through to victory. In his name, the nations will put their hope. In his name, the nations will put their hope. This Jesus was someone special. This Jesus was someone that was going to restore hope where hope had been broken and dashed and crushed again under the powerful hand of the Roman Empire. And early, at the conclusion of the Sabbath, meaning the first day of the week, and the conclusion of the Sabbath was probably what we would consider our Saturday evening at sunset. That's when the first day started for the next day. In the Gospel of John, it says, while it was still dark. So very early on this first day of the week, two women who had followed Jesus and placed their hope in Jesus to be the source of the reversal of their misfortune, the source of their hope was lying in that tomb. So they went to that tomb to see the place where he lay, to perhaps see the body, or so they thought. You see, a cosmic being, the text says, an angel has come to the tomb. And the gospel writer tells us that the angel came to this tomb and rolled the stone away. And there was an earthquake. Matthew has his obsession with earthquakes. And he sat on the tomb, which I find to be the most remarkable piece of information in this resurrection story, that this angel was doing what we like to call he was chilling. He was just sitting there vegging and just sitting while these women approached the tomb, no doubt with heavy hearts and confused minds. The angel is chilling and says to the women, just chill. Or what my oldest daughter likes to tell my younger daughter when my younger daughter is getting on my older daughter's nerves, just chillax. Chillax. Now, church, I don't know what shocks me more. The fact that this angel is sitting on the tomb and tells these women not to be afraid, or that chillax is actually a word in the dictionary. I looked it up. Calm down, relax. I mean, we could literally translate that word where the angel says, do not be afraid. Hey, women, everyone say it with me, chillax. And the church for centuries has continued to be fueled by this cosmic occurrence. They were shocked. I'm shocked. But even more shocking is what the angel says to the women after that. He says, I know that you are looking for Jesus who was crucified. He is not here. He has risen just as he said. Come and see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples he has risen from the dead and is going ahead into Galilee. There you will see him. And church, it is that report that has been the source of what we call Resurrection Sunday. It is this event that has been the impetus of the Easter celebration since the early second century. We have been doing this for nearly 2,000 years. A third century church leader by the name of Hippolytus even penned a prayer for the occasion of Resurrection Sunday. And it's a prayer that's been prayed for hundreds and hundreds of years. He penned these words, Christ is risen. The world below lies desolate. Christ is risen. The spirits of evil are fallen. Christ is risen. The angels of God are rejoicing. Christ is risen. The tombs of the dead are empty. Christ is risen indeed from the dead, the first of the sleepers. Glory and power are his forever and ever. Oh yes, centuries have passed and we continue to be fueled by this cosmic occurrence, this resurrection that took place days after one of the darkest days. The brightest day in our world history was followed by the darkest day in our world history. That is when Christ died on a cross and he was buried in a tomb. And when Jesus Christ arose from the grave, and it was not only the testimony of that angel, but also of these women. These women were the first evangelists. They were the first ones to report the good news of Jesus Christ. And even though they were overcome with grief and disappointment, the news of Jesus' resurrection shot a jolt of excitement into their spirit. And church, these women ran. But before they could get to the brothers, Jesus met them and encouraged them to not be afraid and to continue to tell the others that Jesus was alive. That's Matthew's version. If you like, read Mark's version and read Luke's version and read John's version. If you read the different versions, there are some differences and there are some similarities, but all agree. Jesus was dead, but on the third day, church, he arose. And he is alive. And for some, it caused panic. And for some, it caused joy. And for some, it caused confusion. And for some, it caused fear. Nonetheless, the resurrection has and always will cause some type of reaction. So what about today in 2017? Recall, we are sick and tired of death, right? We can't stand death. We can't stand to hear another report of death. We have had enough of death. And here's the sober truth. Someone, as we are speaking right now, has just died. Tomorrow, someone will get shot. This week, a bombing will claim the life of someone. Someone will die in a car accident. Someone will die of hunger and starvation and disease. The question for us is, even though death has its place in our lives and in our world, what are we going to do about it? How are we going to react to this resurrection, this cosmic event that took place nearly 2,000 years ago in the face of all the death? Death has its place in our lives, but how does it measure up to the life possibilities that flow from the resurrection? See, in 2017, church, that's what we need to grapple with. That's what we need to talk about. That's what we need to question. Or maybe a better question is, if the resurrection means something to us, what are we going to do? You know, it's amusing to me that, and we have so much research that's been done to prove that the resurrection was an actual event that took place. And while I'm grateful for that research, and you can go online and look at all the research that will give you all the facts and the data and the extra biblical sources that prove that the resurrection took place. So what? We can prove it. What are we going to do in reaction to it? The women, they ran and they told someone about it. And when they saw Jesus, they grabbed him and they worshiped him. And even though it's good to worship, when we see Jesus, when we behold the beauty of Jesus, when we come to a place to worship, worship is good. But worshiping all the time and spending all the time worshiping, while it's good, there has to be a moment where we go do something. And so even the women, when they could have just stood there and stood clasped to Jesus and holding on to him, making sure he was real and it was a real, they weren't seeing a ghost or an illusion or a spirit. They let him go and they went and they ran and they told some people about the resurrection. When we're faced with the reality of the resurrection, we've got to do something about it. And I get it, church. It's not like we had the experience of being right there at the garden tomb. I applaud the small group that built this. I was looking at the pictures. I don't know if you were like me looking at the pictures, like, man, they really did a good job of making a replica of that tomb. So even though we have this replica behind me, it's not like being there 2,000 years ago, and it's not like we were able to touch the physical body of Jesus. But as followers of Jesus, the resurrection of Jesus is that which has given birth to this movement that we call the Church of Christ. And while it might be cool to stand and gaze at an empty tomb, Jesus is calling us to go and to do something about it. And I know that death is driving us crazy and is driving us mad. And death, not just physical death, because we have death in marriages and death of dreams and death of opportunities and death of relationships. Death is the source of our depression. It's the source of our disconnect, our discontentment, our disappointment. Death has made happiness and fulfillment elusive ideas in our lives. I get it, church. But I also know this. Those of us in here who have made baptismal commitments to God live in a resurrection reality where death has no sting. It's no mistake that when Paul talks about baptism in the book of Romans, what does he imagine as we are baptized? He imagines the resurrection. In our baptism, we are quickened or made alive, as was Jesus when he was resurrected. This is our reality. Do you know that the same Spirit, and if you don't hear anything that I say today, you've got to hear this. The same Spirit that raised Jesus from the dead lives inside of all of us. You ever stop to think about what that means? That cosmic power that caused an angel to come down, to burst through the tomb, and to take a brutally beaten and dead Jesus, to wake him up and to make him, that same spirit lives inside of those who have made baptismal commitments to God. That spirit is in us. It is alive in us. And I'm talking to followers of Jesus right now. It is living inside of you. It is the same spirit that led to Jesus being raised from that tomb to defeat death. Now that he is alive, he is able to grant life forevermore. That same spirit is inside of you. Paul would say this in the book of Colossians. He says, since then you have been raised with Christ. Set your hearts on things above where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. For you died and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. When Christ is your life, who is your life, appears, then you will also appear with him in glory. The same spirit has been given to us. And while we are surrounded by stories and instances of death, and we'll never stop getting these stories, we'll never stop getting these reports. If you're sick and tired of hearing about them every day, don't watch the news. Get off the internet, get off of Facebook. If you're sick of hearing about it, but even if you're not hearing about it, you need to know it's still gonna take place. Death is still going to happen. So even though we are surrounded by these stories and instances of death, the Spirit is compelling us to rise up, to rise up and to do something about the death that is around us. So church, it's time for us to rise up, and don't let death steal the hope of resurrection possibilities. Church, it's time for us to rise up, to come to Jesus and worship, and then run and tell the world that he is alive and has given us life power. Church, it's time for us to rise up. An empty tomb can lead to filled lives. Church, it's time for us to rise up. This is our moment to declare that death's impact is muted by the life of the resurrection. Church, it's time for us to rise up. And when you hear stories of death and destruction, ask God to lead the church to offer alternatives to death and destruction. Church, it's time for us to rise up. If you have had enough of death, declare this day to be a new beginning of living out the resurrection of Christ in our lives. Saying no to defeat, saying no to mediocrity, saying no to despair. Church, it's time for us to rise up and worship like we have never worshiped before. People can outdo us in so many things, and I say this all the time. They can out-earn us, they can outgrow us, they can out-influence us, they can outfight us, but they shouldn't be able to out-worship us. Church, it's time for us to rise up. Let's take this news to the prisoners, to the naked, to the hungry and thirsty, and to the homeless, and to the broken, and to the lost. Jesus, earlier in the Gospel of Matthew, says, when I come in my kingdom, I'm going to say to my blessed ones, oh, you who gave me a drink, and you who clothed me when I was naked, and you who came and visited me when I was a prisoner. And his disciples said, well, when did we do that? He says, when you did it to the least of these, you were doing it to me. Many of us right now ache and hunger to see Jesus. I want to see Jesus. I want to touch Jesus. Raise your hand if you want to see Jesus, if you want to experience Jesus. Go visit the poor. Go feed the hungry. Go clothe the naked. Go visit prisoners in prison. Because Jesus says, when you do it to them, you've done it to me. You've seen me. Church, it's time for us to rise up. And when death enters our ranks and attempts to rob us of resurrection possibilities, we shout as a church together. We have had enough of death. And then we worship, and then we praise. A couple years ago, some worship songwriters at Hillsong. Hillsong is in Australia, and if you don't know who Hillsong is, you sing several of their songs. We sing several of their songs here in worship. And in my opinion, they're a group of the best worship writers, worship songwriters in our world right now. And a couple years ago, these songwriters got together to write an Easter anthem. And they were struggling with what to write, and they were wanting to write something that had a traditional feel, but in a contemporary setting. And so they settled on a simple anthem called "Oh Praise the Name," and they nicknamed it Anastasis, which is the Greek word for resurrection. So we want to sing this song for you right now. Oh praise the name. This is an anthem that when death comes in our ranks, we're reminded that we are people of the resurrection. And so God is calling us in response to the resurrection to rise up and to give praise and to go forward and to do something in response to the resurrection. Let's listen to this song, "Oh Praise the Name."
I cast my mind to Calvary, where Jesus bled and died for me. I see his wounds, his hands, his feet. My Savior on that cursed tree, his body bound and drenched in tears. They laid him down in Joseph's tomb, the entrance sealed by heavy stone. Messiah still and all alone. Oh,
oh, Lord, our God, oh, praise.
I find Sundays, Easter Sunday, to be the most intimidating Sunday as a preacher. How do you preach the story that is the fuel for every Sunday in a fresh new way or a different way or a more compelling way? And you know what? I'm going to stop trying to do that and just continue to remind us that as people of the resurrection, this is our time to rise up, to say that we've had enough of death and we're going to live in response to the life possibilities of the resurrection. And death has its place, but it will not consume me. It will not control me. It will not write my narrative. You know what's going to write my narrative? The fact that Christ is living right now, that Christ is living with me right now, the fact that we all have been raised with Christ right now. So it's time for us to rise up. Rise up, church. It's time for us to rise up, right? Rise up, church. It's time for us to live in this resurrection possibility. It's time for us to think in new ways in response to this resurrection possibility. It's time for us to give life where there's death. It's time for us to address death and destruction with resurrection possibilities. Church, are you with me? It's time for us to rise up. Church, as we sing this refrain again, this song, Christ is risen from the dead, if there's something that we can do as a church together alongside you, praying with you, walking beside you, reminding you to live in this resurrection possibility, we want to have this opportunity right now. Or maybe today is the day that you want to become a follower, a disciple of Jesus Christ. You want to profess faith in him. You want to be baptized into Jesus Christ, and you want to rise up with the rest of the church. Today is a perfect day to do that. Today is a perfect day to say, I want to be counted among the number of those who have made a declaration to rise up, to say, I have had enough of death. If you've had enough of death, let's sing this song in response to the resurrection of Jesus Christ.